Hello, and thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. Today's episode is presented by Jeremy Aaron, the campus minister at the Mustangs for Christ Student Center at Midwestern State University. Let's tune in now for Jeremy's message.
Always thankful to get to speak to you. And today, as I said, we're not going to be continuing from Ken's series in Matthew, but there were some thoughts he shared last week that I wanted to kind of piggyback on, and I think it will help to encourage us in this idea that we've been talking about a lot, especially into this new year, about making disciples. I want you to think for just a moment. You meet a guest at 10th and Broad this morning, and they come to you with maybe more of a deep question than you were prepared for, but they say, "Hey, what do you do at 10th and Broad to make disciples?" And I think that's a good question to ask as a church. What would we say that 10th and Broad does? We want to make disciples. We talk about it. But what specifically does 10th and Broad do to make disciples? And then I'll pose the question more personal. What do I do at 10th and Broad to help make disciples? How would you respond to that? I think that's a good thing. Last week, Ken talked about from his sermon in Matthew. He asked this question. He says, as a disciple of Jesus, what do I need to do to change my course to cooperate with what God is doing? Because that's a part of making disciples and being disciple, right? We want to encourage others to change their course to follow more closely to what Jesus is doing. But in the same token, as a disciple maker, how can I call somebody to something I'm not doing? And so where do I need to, in my life, change my course to more closely follow what God is doing and where God is leading us? And as I was thinking about that challenge, it's fantastic in two different ways. One, not only helps us to reevaluate the course that I'm on, which direction am I going, and how can I more closely point myself to the will of God, but also as we seek to make disciples, as we seek to look for those who are searching for truth, it also calls us to something higher, and it gives us a greater commission. There's a reason that it's called the Great Commission. I'm thankful for Joseph reading that earlier. It wasn't just a good commission or a pretty thoughtful commission. It was the Great Commission, because Jesus, the last words that he gives us are on point with making disciples. And so we have a beautiful thing to call people to. We can call people higher because Jesus has given us a Great Commission. So what is it about the life of Jesus that draws us to make disciples? As you think of the life of Jesus, we have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John have given us a snapshot of the life of Jesus. What is it in his life that draws us to make disciples? And as I was thinking about it this week, I thought it was kind of interesting. If you think just the information, of course we want more. I want to know more about what Jesus prayed, and I want to know more about how many times did he have to help Peter get his foot out of his mouth, and all the different times. I want to know more about how Jesus interacted, but we only have just kind of a brief history of the life of Jesus. And as the Gospels start off, they give us a few chapters of his birth. Most of them give us a few of that. We have one story that when he was 12. And then we fast forward, and about 95% of what we know about Jesus is what? He was making disciples. He chooses the 12, and for the rest of the Gospels, he invests in those 12 and his other disciples. And isn't it interesting that that's what God wanted us to know through his men? When John writes in John 1, verse 18, he says, one of the reasons Jesus came was to make the Father known. Jesus, you're going to spend your whole time making the Father known to us, helping us to understand God. And what is the central theme you're going to communicate? Invest in people and make disciples and point them to God. I love his birth. We've talked about that at Christmas time, and we need to talk about that all the time. The story when he was 12, he about scared his parents to death, but that gives us hope that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, parents. But we know just a snapshot of that. But the majority of what Jesus did and said and is known to us is the fact that he made disciples. Have you thought about that? That's really what it is. Discipleship is so important for this simple reason, because the life of Jesus says that it is. We talk about discipleship a lot. I've been blessed. Jenny and I are blessed to work with college students, and we talk about it a lot. And so at this time, I want to invite one of my close friends, Talon Heiss. He is a huge influence at Mustangs for Christ, and he's also been a huge blessing. And so I just wanted him to share just a couple thoughts as we get started this morning about what discipleship means to him.
Alrighty. Well, the question that I was given again was, what is my point of view on discipleship? And I can say, as most Christians, we say it's a good thing. But why is it a good thing? And that's where it gets lost. Discipleship is the single most important miracle we can do as Christians today. No, we can't cast out demons or heal the blind or make the lame walk again. But we can go into the world and show the world the love of Jesus Christ. Now, what does the love of Jesus Christ look like? How strong was Jesus' love? Well, Jesus loved each and every one of us so much that he gave his life for us. That was his purpose on this world, to give his life to us to save us from our sins. But what should our purpose of life be? Well, if you look at 2 Corinthians 5:15, it lays it out for us. And he died for all, that those who live should live no longer for themselves, but for him who died for them and rose again. Now, what does that mean? Well, it started off, he died for all, meaning that Jesus paid the ultimate sacrifice and gave his life so that we may be free. Second, that those who live should no longer live for themselves. We as sinners of this world should forget and turn away from our sinful lives. And lastly, but for him who died for them and rose again. Jesus paid it all, and all to him I owe. We must completely turn away from our old lives and walk the path that Jesus did. And that path was spreading of his word throughout the world. Jesus loved each and every person, and he professed it by spreading it to the world. And we should follow in his footsteps as he commands us to do so. Make disciples of all nations, says in Matthew 28:19-20. This isn't an activity done only at a church building. This is a daily life exercise. But how do we do it? Well, Jesus modeled it, and his own experience showed the importance of discipleship. Jesus taught the masses and even the disciples as part of the masses. His commitment to the 12 disciples shows us how much he cared for everyone to be saved. I want everyone to look around the room, look for those empty seats in the rows. Now, could you imagine all of those seats being filled with new people? The love of Jesus is so strong and so powerful. Why aren't we sharing it to others? Why aren't we out every day professing his love to everyone around us? But why is discipleship so important to me? Well, it's the reason I'm here at this church. It's the reason I go to M4C and my small disciple groups. My bond with all of my friends at M4C was made because of the discipleship in this congregation. And as a group of young adults, we are given the task to going out and making disciples of our fellow classmates and friends. I am so grateful for the members of M4C bugging me so much to attend M4C. It is because of them that I attend regularly. This group of people have definitely impacted my life more than I could imagine, but we are lucky enough to have such a loving congregation behind us. So let's love those outside of this congregation and show them the love of Jesus Christ. Therefore, I urge to you, brother and sister, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will of God. Romans 12:2. But the question it really comes down to is, do you love Jesus enough to follow him?
Talon, thank you. I'm thankful that people bugged you. Sometimes making disciples means loving them enough to bug them a little bit. Don't bug them too much, but bug them a little bit. Show them that you care. Show them that you're invested in them. I'm thankful for Talon and for the many others we have at Mustangs for Christ and those of you here that have dedicated your life. You could have been anywhere this morning, but you came here because you value something very important. You value the Great Commission. You value God's Word. As a college minister, Jenny and I think about that a lot. We think about what are ways we can reach the next generation? What are they thinking from their side? And how do we connect? How do we build that bridge to the gospel with them? It's important as we think about disciple making, no matter which generation, if you think about reaching the next generation or reaching your own generation, it's important to consider what barriers might be holding people back. And as we think about, as the scripture tells us, we want to present the gospel, but we want to do it with gentleness and respect. And so how do we do that? As we think about, it's not easy a lot of times to make disciples. As I was thinking about that idea this morning, I was kind of struck with the reality that, you know, today our culture isn't just different from the church. Today, often our culture is against the church. And that's just, we have to just call it like it is. You know, 20 years ago, our culture labeled the church kind of as irrelevant. If you think about that, like, well, that's your thing, that's not my thing, maybe that's your grandparents' thing, I'm not really interested in that. 20 years ago, we kind of got the label as irrelevant, but today, many people in our culture are labeling the church as hostile. No, that's the problem. The church is the problem. And so we have an uphill battle. And I don't tell you that to depress you this morning and to make you lose hope, because there's two ways you can look at that. You can look at it one way as, you're right, culture's against us, it's hopeless, give up. Or we can look at it as, you know what, we've never been closer to Jesus coming back than we are today. And that may spur you on to urgency. That's the side I fall on. I fall on it's more important today than ever to make disciples. It's more important ever today to love people enough to bring up something spiritual in a conversation, to do something maybe more than we've ever done before. 20 years ago, like I said, the church maybe was labeled as irrelevant, but now many people see it as hostile. And I think I can prove it to you. I'm going to break one of the cardinal rules, but get out your phone if you have it this morning. Don't tell Ken I did this, or he may never let me talk again. On your phone, I want to try an experiment. I found this to work best with this website. So if you have, I mean, we may crash the internet in here. That's okay. If you go to yahoo.com, you may have never been there in years. It still exists. Yahoo.com. And if you don't want to do that, that's okay. You can just listen along. Yahoo.com. If you go to that, don't read the news. Don't get distracted by the news. If you're at yahoo.com, on the very top search bar, I want you to type in this phrase. Why are Christians so? And then just leave it right there, okay? Why are Christians so? And just put a space, okay? Why are Christians so? Now, if you're like me, I've already got several suggestions. And by the way, this isn't Yahoo saying they hate Christians. Their predictive texting is just showing what people are searching for. So if you've typed in why are Christians so, put a space and just pick any letter that a word might start with. So I'm going to put A. Why are Christians so annoying, angry? Okay, that's not good. Let me try another one. Why are Christians so? Let me try B. Bad, bigoted. Okay, that's not. I mean, you can pick any letter you want. This is what people are searching for. This is some of the perception we have to fight against. And so I'm here to tell you the reality is making disciples is not easy. Jesus says, in this world you're going to have trouble, but then he also gives us a nugget of hope. He says, but take heart, I've overcome the world. And I don't show you that. Okay, now you need to put away your phones. I promised I wouldn't do that too long. Somebody showed me that one time and it was kind of depressing, but then I thought, you know what? You can look at that two ways. It's either hopeless, the whole world's against us, or making disciples is more important than it's ever been. It's more important to change that narrative. How am I going to change that narrative? By getting up and speaking to people? No, not necessarily. Maybe somebody might be touched by that. But me connecting with students at M4C, you connecting with coworkers, one-on-one, that's how it's going to get changed. And so we have an incredibly important job this morning to change that narrative. There was a book I was reading that was real impactful to me as I was thinking about reaching the next generation. There's a guy by the name of Grant Skeldon, and in his book, he calls them the passion generation. Sometimes millennials and Gen Zs are called the cause-oriented generation. Sometimes they're called the passion generation. Well, he wrote a book called The Passion Generation, and he says millennials have rejected the church for a pretty simple reason. The church has asked too little of them. The church has failed to call them out of their ordinary life and into the extraordinary life of Jesus. They're extremely cause-oriented, and they need a cause to get behind. What greater cause can we connect them to than the cause of Christ? And so you can read that as, church, you haven't done this, but I don't read that as that. I don't read it as a negative. I read it as a, guys, remember our purpose. Remember that the next generation or even your generation, whichever one you're focused on reaching, they're not a lost cause. It's not hopeless. The Great Commission, the Word of God is powerful. And if you believe that, I know you do because you're here this morning. And so as we think about this newer generation's coming up, and whether you want to call them the passion generation or the cause-oriented generation, why is the cause-oriented generation not connecting better with the most cause-oriented organization, the church? No other organization throughout history has ever done what the church has done for the landscape of helping to help those that are helpless and things like that. And so it seems to me a natural fit, but yet we're losing that battle of connecting them. And this guy suggests, Grant Skeldon suggests in his book, that instead of asking them to do less, we need to call them to more. We need to remind them, invite them to that story. As Ken talked about last week, we need to invite them to change the course of their life and call them higher, because that's what the Great Commission does. It calls us higher. This is what he said about this cause-oriented generation. Could it be that we have taken the greatest cause ever and watered it down to just attending an event? Merely showing up on a Sunday and inviting all your friends to do that is not that compelling for the next generation. We have a generation that's saying, send me, I'm ready to go, call me higher. And we're saying, no, stop, you need to sit here and you need to listen to this. This message isn't about don't come to church and don't listen, but that's the first step. We need to do more. We wonder why the next generation doesn't want to come sometimes. And we've been blessed with a new influx of the next generation. And I'm excited. And I think that's not because that we're calling them just to come sit and listen. We're calling them to more. We're calling them to partner with us, make disciples, go volunteer at this school. We're doing things in the community that is exciting for them. And I think that's a part of the gospel of Christ. We're calling them to more. Discipleship is more than just the transfer of information. It's the transformation of a person. I want to say that again. Discipleship is more than just the transfer of information. It's the transformation of a person. Now, discipleship is not mentorship, and I'm not here to say something bad about mentorship, but usually when I think of mentorship, I think of, I'm going to mentor you, I want you to come and sit, and I'm going to impart some knowledge, I'm going to give you some information. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit, but discipleship, in the Bible, I see discipleship as more than that. You see, mentorship says, come meet with me, but discipleship says, come and follow me. That's what Jesus says. There's a difference between mentorship and discipleship. Discipleship has the idea of living life together. So mentorship might say, come meet with me, but discipleship says, come and follow me. But too often the things that I'm involved with are more just come and listen to me. And like I said, that's not bad, but we have to call people to more than just that. Content and information is not the problem in our culture today. It's a blessing for preachers who are trying to get new ideas and look at new stuff. But really today, if you really want someone to get content, most of our next generation is going to get it from somewhere on social media or online. You can YouTube, podcast, download anything you want. And so sometimes we think we got to get them more content, but really content is not the problem. Here's the problem. As far as I've seen, there's no app, there's no Roku or smart device or Apple device that has an actual app that can recreate this genuine connection. They can't find that anywhere else. There's still no app for genuine connection and life-on-life discipleship. And so Jesus, in his infinite wisdom, when he called us to discipleship, he kind of cornered the market on something that's never going to run out. Yes, people are going to hear content, and they're going to maybe not go here and go here, but they're still always going to be searching for connection. They're going to be searching for someone to walk alongside them. They're going to be searching for someone to live life with. Discipleship is about building relationships. There was a study done a few years ago by the Barna Research Group, and they did this study, and they asked Christians, and they said that 71% of Christians said that the main influence in them staying faithful was not because they were going to church, but it was because of a personal relationship with a Christian. And you know, I've found that out in college as well. I'm always curious of why would you choose to continue your faith when you're on your own? And they don't usually point to, oh, it was a great worship service here, or this church really does this. They usually have a name in mind, whether it's a grandparent, whether it's a youth minister. It's because of a personal connection with another Christian that keeps them connected. And I know that maybe it sounds obvious or maybe sounds simple to some of you, but there are people out there right now that don't have those connections, that are searching for those connections. And we can be, you can be that connection for somebody. Jesus connected with the 12, and they lived life together. That may sound kind of like a scary thought. As Paul says, follow me as I follow Christ, which sounds like a great verse to read. But in some people, they think, oh, that puts a target on my back. It does call us to something higher. If I'm going to dare to call disciples, I better be a disciple myself. That's the truth of it. That's why Jesus never called us to something easy, but he did call us to something great. He did call us to something incredibly important. Discipleship is not just a New Testament concept, because we see it all throughout the Old Testament. God was discipling his people, and I even think about the Old Testament of people that were discipled, and I think about stories like one of my favorite stories in 2 Kings chapter 6. You have the story of Elisha and an unseen army of God. Now, you may not see discipleship in that, but it's one of my favorite stories because it talks about war. It talks about the hidden forces of God. It talks about being a peacemaker. It talks about lots of different things. But really, there's a gem inside that story that I go to a lot because it reminds me of the importance of a godly person not only talking about their faith, but displaying their faith. If you're not familiar with 2 Kings chapter 6, we have Elisha, who's a man of God. He's been helping the king of Israel. He has been telling the king of Israel, be on your guard in these places because this enemy king is setting up these traps. And every time this king comes for him, Elisha tells the king of Israel, don't go that way. And so basically he has the map. It's kind of like if you're playing Battleship with somebody, but if you've ever played with a little kid and their board's down a little bit too low, you can kind of see. I would never do that. I would tell them to raise their board up. But if I'm playing with my own kids, Dad, how do you win every time? I'm just good, son. just good. But it's kind of, Elijah had that knowledge. And so this enemy king was furious. Well, as the story gets to the middle of it, they finally surround Elisha and his servant, and they're in the small town called Dothan. And as they wake up the next day, the servant is the first one to get up. And as the servant is walking along the wall, he gets up early in the morning, probably has his coffee. I don't know if they drink coffee. Hebrews, yeah, they had coffee. So he's walking along the wall, and as the sun comes up that day, he sees this enemy army that they've been running from for years. This enemy army has surrounded Dothan, and he is just terrified. All the hope is gone. His faith is just shattered, and he doesn't cry out to God. This servant cries out to Elisha, and he says, "Man of God, save us. We're going to die." And here's Elisha. You kind of see him get up. What's going on here? And he realizes that they've been surrounded. And as this young servant who's weak in his faith is looking to Elisha, you see Elisha stand up. And this is his moment to show him, I'm not only said I'm a man of God, this is how a man of God is going to react. And he says, he prays to God. And remember what he says? He says, God, well, first of all, he tells the servant, he says, "Don't worry. There are more people on our side than there are on their side." And the servant's like, 1, 2, 3, 4,000, 5,000. He's like, "No, your math is bad, Elisha. You're old." That's not the case. And Elisha says, "Don't worry." And then he says a beautiful prayer. He prays to God. He says, "Could you please open my servant's eyes to see you like I see you? Could you open my servant's eyes to see the things, the spiritual things that maybe he's only heard me talk about?" And it says that God opens the servant's eyes, and we see this army has surrounded the city, horses and chariots. But behind that army is an army of horses and chariots of fire. Now, if you're picking two sides, I hope that you would notice that one army is a little different because they're on fire, and you should probably pick that one because they're doing pretty good. So we've got this army on fire, but it's interesting because this man cried out to Elisha, and Elisha had been with him, and he'd probably heard him talk about God and heard him talk about faith. But here, when the rubber meets the road, when this terrible situation happens and this man's lost all hope, Elisha takes him and he says, "You know what, God, can you please help him to see you like I see you? I've discipled people before, I've talked to them, but I don't know if I've ever prayed that." Now, if they could see the army of God, that'd be amazing. But wouldn't that be a neat thing to pray for somebody, either who you're wanting to disciple or you're discipling, if you could look to them and say, "God, could you please help them to see you like I see you? Could you help them to see the value in changing your course?" I think it'd be such an amazing thing. But Elisha models what it's like to trust in God. The servant's eyes are open. But the cool thing about that story is they don't even wipe him out. Elisha takes him, convinces the king of Israel to give him a meal. They serve him lunch and they send him home. And so he saw Elisha, the man of God, powerful in prayer. He saw Elisha, the man of God, powerful as a peacemaker. Lots of different things that he saw from Elisha. I want to leave you with two things as we close this morning. And I tried to boil it down because we talk a lot about being a disciple, but I think we need to have just a couple of phrases just on our mind or on our heart, because sometimes people don't want to hear a 2-page sermon. They want to hear, okay, disciple maker, what does that mean? And here's what it means to me, and I hope you can connect with this. Being a disciple maker is really about two things. One, it's about calling someone to change their course and follow Christ. I know that's pretty basic, but that's what it is. If you're going to call somebody to be a disciple, you're calling them to change their course and to follow Christ. And two, it's about having them around you enough for them to see what faith in action looks like. And I said, sometimes that's too often I spent trying to figure out, okay, how can I clear my schedule to get someone to, and I think that was the wrong approach. Because if you look at it the other side, here's my schedule. Who can I bring along to what I'm doing? I should already be doing the things of Christ. Who can I bring to dinner? Who can I do this? And so to me, that kind of, I was like, oh man, why did he tell me that? Because now my excuses are gone. Because I was thinking, I don't have enough time in my schedule. Well, it's true. We're all busy. But who can I bring along to the things I'm already doing and show them the love of Christ? Call someone to change their course, and being willing to have someone around you enough for them to see what faith and action looks like. That's what Elisha did. That's what Jesus did. And that's what the gospel is calling us to. So as you think of that this morning, as Talon mentioned these empty chairs, I want you to think of two or three people that you're willing to bug a little bit more than you have before. I want you to think of two or three people that you're willing to remind them of the course that Jesus offers in changing their course. But I also want you to think of two or three people that you can invite along to things you're already doing, whether that's dinner, whether that's a volunteer something, whatever it is. Think of somebody that you can invite along so that they can experience what it's like when a person of God lives their life in this world. Wendell, let's continue in worship this morning.